Welcome to the Drama Teacher Podcast, brought to you by Theater Folk, the Drama Teacher Resource Company. I'm Lindsay Price. Hello. I hope you're well. Thanks for listening. So we've got a new year. Hello, 2017, and a new shiny intro. What do you think? So we here at Theater Folk Global Headquarters are focusing our efforts all on you. Yes, you. I am. I'm talking to you. Yes, no, not them. You. Absolutely you. This is episode 173, and you can find any links to this episode in the show notes, which are at theaterfolk.com/episode173. Today, we're talking playwriting, specifically student playwriting. How many of you raise your hands? I know you want to include playwriting, but there's something about it, and it's something specifically that is very trepidatious and worrisome when it gets to feedback, right? How do we give good feedback to student writers that doesn't cause them to put their play in a drawer and never open that drawer for 25 years? So today we're talking to Nick Pappas. He's a guy who wears many hats. He's a playwright and a director. He teaches. He's a dramaturg. And he is Theater Folk's play submission reader. So he sits on all sides of the table when it comes to plays. But as I said, we're talking specifically about student feedback and giving feedback. And how do you give that good feedback? How do you get that good feedback? Well, let's get to it and find out. All right. I am here with Nick Pappas. Hello, Nick.
Hello.
So Nick and I are at the International Thespian Festival right now, which will be long over by the time this comes out. But we are going to talk about something which is universal is not exactly the word I'm looking for. Timeless is the word
there
I'm looking for.
Yes.
There you go. It doesn't quite matter. But we're in a really unique situation right now, wouldn't you say?
Yes.
We are doing a, Nick and I are both working as dramaturgs as part of a program called Playworks, in which four student playwrights are chosen. Do you know how many plays are sent in to Playworks?
I think it goes from a process of, I heard they get about 70 plays.
Wow.
And then those 70 are reduced down to like 10 or 12.
Yeah.
And then
they choose the four.
Yeah.
And those four playwrights from, it's just the States, right? So it's all over the States. They get brought to Lincoln, Nebraska for the International Thespian Festival, and they get a director and a dramaturg and actors, and we put up their plays.
Yeah, and 4 days of rehearsal, babe?
We had three this year because auditions on Tuesday, Wednesday, we had Tuesday rehearsal, Wednesday rehearsal, Thursday rehearsal, and then
up
there's
on Friday.
A little bit today, and then you guys go up tomorrow.
Tomorrow, correct.
And so we're going to talk about what it's like to talk to a student playwright, because a lot of you I know include playwriting in units in your program, how to talk to students, how to give them feedback, so that they continue writing and they don't curl up into a ball and never write again, which is not what we want. But I want to start with you, Nick. So that's my preamble.
All right.
You wear a lot of hats.
Yes.
And the three that I know are playwright and teacher and dramaturg.
Yes.
What would you consider your biggest hat? Like, which is the one that...
Oh, that's a good question. Sometimes I feel like it depends on almost time of day, if that makes any sense.
It's 2 o'clock.
It's 2 o'clock.
I feel like a writer.
I feel like I identify most when I tell people what I do. I say writer.
Mm-hmm.
But unfortunately, like just the nature of a teaching schedule, I teach at a college. Teacher, I think, is where the bulk of my time actually ends up being.
Right.
So it's that weird give and take, right?
Yeah.
But as a teacher, I'm also... a dramaturg.
Yeah.
I mean, that's really what it comes down to. So even saying teacher feels sort of false in that I'm really doing dramaturgical work with students.
Interesting.
I teach playwriting. I teach script analysis. And those are the main two courses.
Yeah.
So In that sense, yeah, writer dramaturg,
yeah, writer dramaturg, teacher,
also director.
See, director, I was about, and then I was gonna say, are there any other hats that are important to you?
Yeah, director is a real important one. I love to direct. I love to do that. And I think that's part of the dramaturgical spirit, mm-hmm. where I'd like to find a text. I like to climb inside and just really struggle with what it means and how to present it. Mm-hmm. And I like working with actors. Actors, a hat that I used to wear that I sometimes put back on. There was the day I knew that I didn't need to be an actor anymore or didn't want to be an actor anymore. I was auditioning for a commercial in San Francisco for a famous chip company. I don't know if I should say the name.
Probably not. Famous chip.
famous tortilla chip company.
Oh, okay.
Maybe narrow
it rhymes down a with
mojitos.
Rhymes with mojitos.
Yeah. I did this audition, and this guy says to me, "Hey," the director is like, "Hey, this is great. Are you willing to run on a treadmill in your underwear while getting slapped by a fish and/or a pickle?" And I went, "Yeah, that sounds awesome. I would love to do that. That's great. Yeah, just let me know." And I walked out of the room and I was like, "What the? Am I thinking? Why was I so excited about that? And do I have any dignity?" And the answer is, I don't know why I was so excited about that. And no, I don't have dignity. But I didn't. Luckily, I
didn't get it, so you didn't have to make that decision in the moment. So I didn't have to make that choice
at all. Yeah, but man, I feel like that was a long narrowing path.
No, well, that's okay. I was gonna say that because I started out as an actor, and I knew the moment I didn't want to be an actor anymore when I was in a play that I had written, and I'm talking, and my brain is listening to the audience respond to the play and not to me, and I'm like, I don't need this anymore.
I can get my recognition other places.
Yes. And so when did writing, when was, do you write, because I know you write plays, you write wonderful plays, which we will link to. And when did writing kick in for you?
Writing kicked in. I've always been a person who absolutely loves, really, it's all started with like TV and film, but mostly film. I remember being 12 in a theater, and my family saw Pulp Fiction, which, first of all, I'm a 12-year-old.
12?
Yeah. I did not have restrictions on movies at all. Like, the R rating meant nothing to my parents, which I actually really love.
Well, you're not personally scarred, so you...
That's what you think. And I remember watching Pulp Fiction, and the Vincent Vega character, spoiler alert, is shot in one scene, and then he shows up later, and I remember my dad being like, "What's going on?" I was like, "Oh, see, we've gone back in time, and what's happened here?" So like, already at like 12, I had like this weird dramaturgical writer structure hat on, explaining what's happening in this movie. But I remember being really excited about like the dialogue and the way it sounded and how people talked in that movie. And I knew that Quentin Tarantino was like writer-director, but I don't think I understood exactly what writer meant at that point in time. And it really wasn't... So that's always been on my bones, right? That thing, that writer thing. But the first time I ever actually tried to write was I was at a junior college, and there was a sign that said student written one acts. Anyone can turn in a play. And I was like, oh, that's going to be real easy. It's going to be real easy to do. And it's going to be awesome. And I wrote this really awful show about dogs and cats fighting each other and trying to, I think I wrote it before like that Cats and Dogs movie came out, to be clear. They ripped me off.
Of course they did.
They ripped me off. It was like the very adult R-rated version of that show. And it was terrible. And ever since then, I've had this weird, like, fascination with seeing if it ever gets easier. And it doesn't. Yeah. It gets harder. Sometimes it gets easier.
What a fabulous way to put it, because it's like, I think so many people just look at what we do and go, well, that's really easy.
Yeah.
So many people. And that's a really interesting thing to say. And an interesting thing for everybody listening to hear, that it really just gets harder. Mm. And that's really important for something for students to sometimes know.
Yeah.
That first draft, which may have been easy, because there are there are those talented writers out there, you know, but there's more often than not in classrooms, it's one maybe quasi talented writer and 40 struggling mm-hmm. writers, and so it's I think it's a good thing to know that, and to tell them it gets harder and that that's an okay thing.
Yeah. Well, I think some of that hardness comes from what I always explain to students is that, you know, I think as writers, and what becomes difficult, and I do this all the time, where like, well, I'm going to write this thing and I'm going to like change the planet, I'm going to change the world, and I'm going to win the Pulitzer and the Emmy and the Tony and like every, you know what I mean? Like, we all have these like things going on in our head. And one of the things that I like to try to keep in mind, and I try to tell students very, very flatly, is like, I'm sorry, like, you're not going to change the world with your play, like, or anything. Nobody is going to change the entire world. No text has changed the entire world, except for maybe religious texts, right?
Right.
And everyone seems a little disheartened, but then I kind of pop into like, but you can change one person's world. Mm-hmm. You can change one person's mood. One person is going to see this and they're going to feel better. They're going to laugh when they've had the worst day of their lives. They're going to, their one life, that one life's going to change. And that's doable. I feel like that is something that any writer, no matter who you are at any level, can change a world. And when you sort of take the pressure off of like changing the entire planet and make it about just changing a moment for a person. For me, that's where I'm like, oh, now I can do that.
Yeah.
Sometimes I forget. Like, I often have to remind myself of that very thing.
Yeah. Yeah. So where does, for you, the dramaturgy hat fit into you as a writer? Like, where did that come in for you?
Are you asking, like, at what point?
Yeah.
Like,
okay. So when did you start not only just being a writer, but also being, having that piece to it?
Yeah. I think that really hit when I was in college. I was in an MFA program at San Francisco State, and we were an interesting program in that, most playwriting programs, it was for playwriting. Mm-hmm. Most playwriting programs are attached to theater departments. Our program was attached to the creative writing department. So I was working with poets, novelists, creative nonfiction.
Yeah.
Yeah. At the time, it was a struggle in some ways, but now I look back and I realize how much my writing has improved and how different it makes my writing to have been in cross disciplines like that, where you're forced to take poetry classes.
Yeah.
Which an MFA poetry class, by the way, is just a bunch of people drinking wine, arguing over words. It's beautiful. It's fascinating. And I saw two people almost get into a fist fight over language poetry, which was like a...
Rock on.
Yeah. Like, I was like, that's cool. But there was a real struggle for me because I'm a theater person, mm-hmm. obviously, at heart. And... the struggle became, if you wanted to be a playwright who was involved in the theater department, you really had to make sure that you were
there,
putting yourself out there.
Mm-hmm.
So I kept signing up for theater classes, and one of the classes I took was a dramaturgy class, which was awesome. It was great. So like that was like half of the step was just signing up for dramaturgy classes and mm-hmm. trying to learn this other art form that I think even at that point, I don't even know if I knew the word or knew what it meant.
Like, what does it mean to you? What do you think it means?
Well, I think there's two kinds of dramaturgy.
Mm.
There is the dramaturge who really helps new play development, helps a writer create work. They are questioners. They are people who, in my opinion, what they do is they figure out what the playwright is trying to say through questions. through just dialogue between them back and forth. And then they are also the mirror of the play, where it's like, if, oh, you, I see you're trying to write about this, and this is what you're saying to me, correct? And yes. Okay. Well, in the script, that is not coming across in this way, this way, this way, this way.
Right.
And then there's the other kind of dramaturg who is the historical
researcher guy.
Yeah, the researcher. But I think either person at its core, or at the core, they are advocates for the play.
Yeah.
Including, in sometimes I feel, you have to be an advocate for the play in such a way that you have to fight the writer in some ways to help them get the play that they want, that they keep talking about.
And I'm going to say that I'll bet that this is where teachers struggle the most.
Mm.
When they are trying to give feedback.
Right.
And that notion of fighting the young writer a little bit, who has no background in writing,
right,
only that they've written this thing and they got to the end and it's perfect.
Uh-huh.
You know, and how do they, and what language do they use, and what method do they use, and what pathway do they use to get to the student to make their work the best that it can be?
Yeah, that's a great question. If you know the answer.
Yeah, let me know, right?
Yeah.
Well, I think, I'm going to say, I think questions are key.
Yeah, I do too. Well, I think not only, and one of the first things I always do whenever I'm working with somebody as a dramaturg is, and this is student, this is professional, all over the board. One of the first things I say to them is, I try to remind them that I'm there for them. I'm there for the play. This is what I'm here for, is to help you create what you want to create.
Mm-hmm.
And I really try to make it very clear that I am there to help them.
Mm-hmm.
In no way do I want to write the play myself. I've got my own things that I'm working on. I don't want to give suggestions or ideas necessarily, which I think is a good reminder that I'm on your side. I'm not fighting against you.
Mm-hmm.
Even though earlier I said fighting against the playwright, I don't mean necessarily like
odds. You mean in like a very specifically, look, this is what I think your intention is.
Yes.
The script is not showing that, and they're fighting that the script maybe is saying that.
Exactly.
Or they don't want to change anything.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And then the thing that I always, and that's 100% right. And I think on top of that, when you talk about changes, the one thing I always say too is, you know, we live in a time of computers, which is great because you can save a file.
Yeah.
And I always try to make it very clear that, look, whatever we talk about, you don't have to keep, but all I ask is that you try. And if you hate it, you can actually tell me to pound sand and I hate that idea, or I hate what we're talking about. Go away from that idea, and you don't have to accept it, because there is no danger in that. If there's something that we talk about, like, oh, this is missing, try writing into this. And if they write into this and they love it, great. If they don't, they can always go back to the previous draft. And I'm a firm believer in that if you write a scene that doesn't end up, quote unquote, working in the play, or if you write characters that don't work or whatever that is, and you scrap it, it's actually not a waste of time, because you actually learned something about the play.
Mm-hmm.
Even if you've learned that this doesn't work, you know forever that that doesn't work and you have to go in a different direction. I think that is valuable, it's vital, and it's useful.
I think that's really valuable, particularly for today's student, because they, more than I've ever seen, are terrified of failure.
Yeah.
They're terrified of something not working, and that in writing, so many things don't work
right?
all the time.
Right? Well, I tell them that, you know, and I know this for myself, like,
yep,
your first draft's going to be bad. It's going to suck. Mm-hmm. And that's all there is to it. But the point is that you've gotten a first draft.
Yeah.
Only after you've gotten the first, I always say, like, after you finish the first draft can you actually start writing.
Yeah.
Because otherwise it's like this weird mishmash of ideas in your head that you sort of like vomit out onto a page to see what you even really have in the first place.
Yeah. And that, more than anything, the most important thing is to get to the end of the first draft.
Yeah.
To not stop on page 2, because think it sucks, and mm-hmm. ergo, you're horrible, and you shouldn't be doing it, and you failed. Instead, I spend a lot in when I teach playwriting workshops, I spend a lot of time with those kind of tools in terms of just, you have to keep writing. Like, you have to, like, if that's the only thing they ever learned in a playwriting class or a playwriting unit, to move forward when every instinct in your head is telling you the children of the world will die if you keep writing. You know,
right.
It's like, and you still
write. Sorry, children, here we go.
We keep going. And then that is a success.
Absolutely. Well, I think that's exactly what did I mention this before? I mean, that's exactly the thing of, like, that idea of promoting the idea of, like, you're right. Your first draft sucks.
Yeah.
And it's supposed to.
Yeah.
You know, every writer's first draft is not very, I mean, even, like, you know, the Tennessee Williams first drafts sucked. like, Arthur Miller's first drafts were not good.
Yeah.
So, like, even the great people working, Quentin Tarantino, his first drafts are terrible.
Yeah.
And they're supposed to be.
Yeah.
And that's, I think that's freeing. And to let a student know that in some ways is both terrifying, but it's also freeing. Because I think it allows them too to not get married to an idea and to not want to hold on to something so tight, which I think is something that student writers love.
My play is done and it is perfect.
Exactly.
You know? Okay, so rounding this all in feedback, that students need to know that the first draft must get done and it won't be good.
Right.
And that is actually the best thing because you actually have something written down.
Absolutely.
And that when you're thinking about giving feedback, that I really liked how you said you want to question in terms of instead of, we're not talking likes and dislikes. You don't want to get into that.
Never.
Questions are the great way to go. And being a mirror, I think, is a wonderful image. This is what I think you're saying.
Yeah.
When I read this, this is what I think you're saying.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, and I think that's really important is because I think, I mean, we all do it. I've probably done it like 9 times in this podcast already where I think I'm saying one thing,
and
the word vomit's coming out, and I'm like, "Wait, hold on! Is my point even understood?" So I think that's just a normal thing, and I know as a writer, that's what I love when someone says back to me, like, "So I read it, and this is what I'm seeing. Like, what is this? Is what I think it's about?
Mm-hmm.
Is that congruent with what you're thinking?" And I think that's a really great thing for the writer. Is two things at that point to me. Two things can happen.
Yep.
One is, yes, that is exactly what I'm seeing, which is great.
Mm-hmm.
Well, I guess there's three things. Two is...
And a fanatical devotion to the Pope.
And two is, no, I don't see what it is, and I need to change it to make sure it matches my vision. And three is, no, that's not what I started with, but now that you've said that, I like that, and I didn't realize I was writing about that, but now that I realize that I'm writing about that, I want to follow that path. And I think that's a really great thing. I think that's a gift for a lot of writers, is that idea of, well, I think it's the thing going back to the first draft being bad, of like, you don't need to be married to even what that original spark was, because that spark is a spark. We don't know where that fire is going
to
go.
Yeah. A thing I like to say is that ideas are, they're really a dime a dozen. Ideas are nothing. Execution is what is really matters.
Absolutely.
Right? It's
absolutely.
The idea is you're merely a starting point.
Uh-huh.
And it's the execution of what's going on with the devolution, not devolution, working on the idea.
Yeah.
You know? Words, who needs them? Right? Just the making what you do with it.
Yeah. Yeah.
That's what is really important.
Well, it's the execution of it. I mean, it's interesting. Like, you know, when you even think of like a copyright, like you can't copyright an idea. You can only copyright the execution of an idea.
Yep. There's a reason for that.
Exactly. And that's because the ideas are a dime a dozen. Right. Absolutely.
Yeah. And awesome. Okay. So we have questions. What else is do you do when you're in your methodology of giving feedback to students?
One of the things I love to do is, I think sometimes we tend to focus on the negative, which always ends up to me being a Band-Aid on a problem, right? Like, oh, this doesn't work. Can you fix this?
Interesting. Yeah.
Well, I think,
go write this better.
Go write this better. Well, it feels like in some ways that it's a band-aid, because oftentimes when you give notes, or when I give notes even, or when anyone does, they identify a problem, like, say, in the third act, and they're like, oh, well, this isn't working here in the third act, and you need to fix this moment, yada, da, 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 right? You can fix it and fix it and fix it. It never quite feels exactly right. There are mm-hmm. things that will feel better. But sometimes it's that stepping back and realizing that, oh, shoot, this problem in the third act is actually fixed with a single line in act one. Because it wasn't that moment itself. It was the setup of that moment.
Mm-hmm.
And I think it's really important to step back and kind of think through that. And when we focus on the negative, I think we tend to miss like the overall picture of things. Mm-hmm. And it's not exactly focusing on the positive either. It's focusing on moments that are striking, exciting, those kinds of things that just sort of stick to your guts and won't let you go. Those images that feel really strong and beautiful. Those moments, those single lines of dialogue where it's like, yes, this is it. This is the place where you're supposed to be for this particular show. And I think writers are intuitive and they're smart. And if they're hearing like, this works and 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 this feels right and this feels right and this is the thing that's sticking with me and this is the thing that's sticking with me, I think two things happen. Number one, they start identifying what that show is through the moments that are working. And I think number two, if they're not hearing that this moment over here, like moment C, is striking or exciting from anybody, I think there's that natural thing of like, oh, well, I think I need to look at that.
Mm-hmm.
I need to see what's working so I can understand what's not working.
Mm-hmm.
Whereas if you talk about what's not working, the writer will never understand what is working.
Right. Right. You start with these are the moments where what I think you're trying to say really pop.
Yes, exactly.
Right. So we have this, we have this, we have this.
Uh-huh.
Well, what about this?
Exactly.
You know? Is this doing the same thing?
Is this working on the same level?
Is this working on the same level? So that they're actually sometimes the one who actually respond. I've been finding that this week with my playwright, and that she's very contemplative. And it's been really interesting to see her grow in that she's starting to become contemplative of this is not at the same level that I want that this moment is. And she really realized yesterday that she's like, beginning is not the same as, you know, whatever, page three is not the same as when things start going at page seven. I'm like, no, it's not. You're right.
Yeah.
You're right. You know, and we didn't actually, that was the first conversation we have about it. Just in terms of not emphasizing the negative.
Right.
But just sort of doing that little bit work. Exactly as you're saying, we're doing a lot of little bit work.
Yeah.
And you're working with someone who is doing a lot of work.
Yes.
And that's interesting too. Do you, and just in terms of student writers really get overwhelmed sometimes.
Mm-hmm.
How do you deal with that when someone is maybe so overwhelmed so they can't make any changes, or they are overwhelmed because they're making so many changes?
That's a great question. I think some of it's based on individual. I know that sounds, and that is like anti-advice, right? Or anti.
No, except for the fact that I'll say that that's important too for classroom writing work. Is that you cannot give the same feedback to everybody.
Because no two writers are the same.
The writers will freak. Like, you know, there are some, we have two completely different writers. Mm-hmm. And I think that they needed two completely different approaches with feedback in order for them to move forward successfully.
Absolutely. Yes. And that's true. And that's so true. Because I feel like even you and I would need different kinds of feedback, right, as writers.
Oh, absolutely.
You know, one of the things I try to do with feedback to it's after the questioning. First, it's almost like a con, right? Where it's like, I need to gain your trust.
Oh, sure.
So then I can start talking to you about other things. So I think that's where the questions come from. I think really establishing language and a common vocabulary is really important. And I think stating the obvious becomes very important. So what I always do is if I ask a question and there's an answer that comes to me, I'll rephrase the answer again as like my own, like, oh, so you said this, And what you mean by that is da, 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 da. Am I correct?
Yeah.
Which builds that trust, right? And then from there, what it allows me to do is a couple of things. And we're talking about the overwhelming thing. So yeah. First of all, if you have trust, I think the overwhelming thing starts going away. And number two is I try to give all notes in sections. Because I think, especially with a student writer, like I'll read a play and I see like, there's 50 things that I identify that, like, we have to look at this
movie. You give three.
I give three or four. Yep. Which helps. And just knowing that, like, all we need to do is fix these three, I read it. Great. These are wonderful moments. But now that that's opened up, let's look at this. Now that's opened up, let's look at this. And it might feel repetitive to them. And they might be driven up a tree a little bit. But, you know, anyone can fix three things.
Yes. Nobody can fix 50.
Right.
It doesn't matter how good they are.
Yeah. Yeah. And trying to do that in one draft is like, ugh, that's impossible.
Yeah.
And I try to identify I also try not to make all three major things. Like, you know, one will be like, let's work on a little character here. Let's work on a little structure here. Let's work on a little dialogue here. Right. Mm-hmm. And those are the three that I'm going to give you. And the other thing that I tend to do as well that seems to help is I give, in a way, I call it like the worst advice ever version, mm-hmm. where I'll try to identify, like, if there's an issue with let's say the ending of a play, I'll say, you know, this isn't quite working here. You know, this moment is tough. It's naughty. I don't think it's the thing that you're kind of pushing at. And I think the kind of thing that will help it is something like, well, I mean, this is the worst advice ever. So you shouldn't go with this version, but what if, you know, he bursts into the room and punches the guy and then grabs the safe and then runs away? Mm-hmm. I mean, that's terrible, but you get that feeling that I'm getting at.
So it's like, it's because it's, you really don't want to, you can't write their play.
Absolutely.
You can't give their suggestion, but if here's a direction, it's the spark, it's just giving them but I could do this instead.
Absolutely. It's the talking about the tone mm-hmm. of the moment. It's talking about the pace of the moment
mm-hmm.
and it's talking about the intention of the moment
mm-hmm.
without actually giving a moment,
mm-hmm.
Which is interesting because, well, and the other thing too is, I really try to promote the idea of like, there is no such thing as a bad idea.
Mm-hmm.
Especially when you're working with multiple people, even if it's just two people, because my terrible idea might spark a really good idea from you.
Yep.
And your really good idea can really spark like the greatest idea in the world from me. And then back and forth and back and forth. And we just keep getting better.
Yep.
And it also, I think, gives them the freedom to sort of quote unquote pitch terrible ideas.
Pitch ideas.
Because I'm pitching terrible ideas.
Well, you don't go anywhere. If there's no ideas, then nothing happens.
Mm-hmm.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Okay. So as we wrap up here, because we're chatting with Jattersons.
You mean this isn't a 4-hour podcast?
It is not, man.
Oh, crap. I'm sorry.
Can you imagine? And now we're on hour 3 of our talk on feedback. Now nobody's listening. What advice would you give to teachers? Because sometimes the biggest issue that teachers have with giving feedback is their own insecurities
mm-hmm.
about how they think of themselves as writers or not writers.
Yeah.
And having the fear that they're going to, you know, give the wrong feedback or just really stop those students in their tracks. What advice would you give to teachers?
Well, I think if you... Oh, that's a tough one.
Mm-hmm. I agree.
Yeah.
Go for it.
That's a tough question. Well, I think one of the things is just quite simply... allow for time is number one. Know that the process takes time. And that's not only the writing process, but the note-giving process. Unless I'm in a hurry, I try to read something 2, 3, maybe even 4 times before I even start to give notes.
Mm-hmm.
Because I feel like I truly need to understand it. I think the other thing, too, is making sure the student, and we've already kind of hit this, but to reiterate, making sure the student understands that you are on their side,
mm-hmm.
that you are trying to help them develop a play. You are not trying to develop a play with them.
Mm-hmm.
It gives them ownership in a way. And you don't have to be a good writer to be a good dramaturg. In fact, some really, I shouldn't make a blanket statement like this, but I feel like dramaturgs and writers often do overlap, but
not necessarily.
Yeah, but a lot of times they don't, because I know some writers who are great who would make the worst dramaturgs in the world.
It's a skill set.
It is. It is. And I think in the feedback giving process, it's always about checking back in with the student,
mm-hmm.
rephrasing what the student has said,
mm-hmm.
And just again making sure that trust is there. I know I said that like 19 times, but I feel like
you know what? Yeah, you never can say this kind of. You can't say this stuff too many times because it is really dangerous. Is not the right word, but it's dangerous because mm-hmm. you can really you can damage. You
can.
Do you know how many people I talk to who say who still remember like 25 years later that teacher when I was in 10th grade ripped apart a piece of writing and I put it in a drawer and I never wrote again.
Oh my gosh.
How many people who just have been completely heartbroken by someone who was an English teacher who, you know, said that the someone's play was the worst because it had bad grammar, and it's like,
oh god,
that's word, you know, and then on the other side, sorry, so people who are just inspired to keep going just because somebody said, I believe in you.
Yeah, well, I think that's key, and I think that's the thing when I go back to like negative feedback is unuseful. Of always talk about the positives of a mm-hmm. play, right? Always talk about what's exciting, because I mean, look, I've read some really, really, really terrible things in my day,
mm-hmm.
And even the worst plays I've read, I can find things that are interesting, exciting, that kind of stick with me, that mm-hmm. I want to be, that I'm like, oh, that moment there is really cool.
Mm-hmm.
And when we start focusing on that kind of stuff, it kind of cracks open the world, right?
Yeah.
It cracks open the thing. And don't be mean.
Be constructive. I really like your notion of if you see 50 things wrong with something, pick three.
Yeah.
Like, and what a great, you know, and we'll end it with the thing that everybody needs to end on these days, which is assessment. But if you give a student, here are three things that I see that need to be changed. If they change those three things, regardless of whether the play is a, you know, a Pulitzer Prize winner,
mm-hmm.
all they had to do was change three things, then they've improved and they should, you know, that's something you can assess them on.
Yeah.
Right. And that's something if you don't feel comfortable as a writer, but you can identify these things, then you can identify if they've changed them.
Absolutely.
You know? And everybody wins.
And I think, you know what? And I think that what adds to that is it's about potential.
Yeah.
And talking about a play's potential is I think a really important thing, because we're talking about it as a thing that's in process, not a thing that is a product.
Yes.
So yeah.
Yeah, it's absolutely. Like, that's, what are we really talking about here? We're not, what I just said, we're not talking about writing the next Arthur Miller, the next Pulitzer Prize winner. You're talking about a kid having experimenting with self-expression.
Right.
And
right.
That's all process.
Yeah.
Mm.
Yeah. And never shutting down an idea.
Yeah.
And by that, I mean, you know, there's going to be kids who are struggling, and
yeah.
I can't tell you how many times I've read plays about suicide from kids,
oh, yeah.
or bullying, or sexuality, like coming out and things like that, and not shutting that down, encouraging that expression. Because I think when you're 15, 16, 17, 34, whatever.
47.
So, yeah. Everything that you're writing is about you in some way, shape, or form. And you're struggling and contending with something. Like, you're in a fight against something, and it can only be expressed with words. You're trying to figure something out. And I think that's important, just to let them figure it out.
It's the reason I believe every student should write a play.
I love that.
Just once. Because they will find something in them, and it'll come out, and it will change a part of them.
Yeah.
I'll end on, I'll always remember, this girl is, this is 20, it must be 20 years ago now, so she must be at least in her late 30s,
mm-hmm.
Was pregnant. She wrote a play about a character who was pregnant, who decided not to have the baby, and she changed her mind. She was all up for teen mom, I'm going to mm-hmm. do it. And she wrote herself out of that mindset just by writing about a character, what would happen to that girl.
Uh-huh.
And just realizing
that this was a mistake, that no, like, and just like writing did that. Wow. I know.
Well, and it goes back to that idea of like, you're not going to change the entire world. You can change one world, even if that world's your own.
Oh, we did that so well. I know, you put a pin on that. this has been great. Thank you so much,
Thank you so much.
Thank you, Nick. Before we go, let's do some theater folk news. So, as I said at the beginning, we have a new intro, a new podcast title, the Drama Teacher Podcast. We have a new tagline for theater folk, the Drama Teacher Resource Company. As you can see, it's all about you. And more than that, we want to feature you, dear drama teacher, dear drama educator, and what you do. Are you doing one of our plays? Take a rehearsal picture and send it to us. Are you working on a monologue in the classroom? Take a picture, send it to us. Are you a member of the Drama Teacher Academy and you're using an exercise? Take a 30-second video, send it to us. We want to showcase you on Facebook. We want to brag about what you do. Where do you send all this? tfolk@theaterfolk.com. And what is the Drama Teacher Academy, you ask? Well, I'm glad you asked. Check on the show notes, which are at theaterfolk.com/episode173. Finally, where oh where can you find this podcast? We post new episodes every second Tuesday at theaterfolk.com and on our Facebook page and Twitter. You can find us on youtube.com/theaterfolk and on the Stitcher app. You can subscribe to the Drama Teacher Podcast on iTunes. All you have to do is search for the word Theater Folk. And that's where we're going to end. Take care, my friends. Take care.